All right. At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify requirements for chairing a meeting at Central Orlando Group Saturday night speaker meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and attend a group conscious meeting. And again, my name is Marissa. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
And I meet all of those requirements. I know that when I first got sober, I think the thing that I was concentrating the most on at the time was just not wanting to drink and not wanting to die. When I first came in here, I was very fortunate enough to see somebody, follow the guidelines of this program, follow some instructions and get better, and that gave me the courage to get the help that I needed as well. And as I stayed around, I realized I had some other problems. still time past some other problems, but you know, it's amazing that working the steps with a sponsor who had a sponsor has kind of actually helped solve some of those problems, and I don't have to turn to a drink today. So definitely grateful to be here tonight. Thank you. And now it's time to introduce the speaker. Actually, I wasn't really supposed to be here tonight, so I did ask Robin, my sponsor, to pick the first speaker, but you know, God works in mysterious ways, and it turns out I am here to chair, so which is great. And this lady is amazing. I remember meeting her at the women's meeting, the 6 o'clock women's meeting, and you know, I've heard her share a lot of great stuff and go through a lot of things in sobriety, and so I'm really looking forward to hear her speak tonight. Everybody, please welcome Nancy.
All right, I'd be lying if I didn't say I'm really nervous. But I know that there are no mistakes in God's world today, and I'm really honored and privileged to be up here to share my experience, strength, and hope. Someone just said to me before I sat down again, she said, "Nancy, all you're doing is telling your story, and you know it better than anybody." So I guess the most important thing I can say tonight is that I'm Nancy and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Nancy.
And before I accepted, recognized to my innermost self that I had a problem, you know, my image of an alcoholic was, you know, the guy in the gutter in the raincoat with the brown bag. And so I didn't really think I had a problem. I just didn't. What I know now, after getting sober, is I was brought up in an alcoholic family. But they didn't look like the alcoholic in my mind. But, you know, I can look back and drinking was everywhere all the time. You just never got to get, we never got together as a family without alcohol. And, if there was an event without alcohol, we weren't there very long. You know, we just, you know, we didn't hang around very long, so we could get home and my parents could have their own happy hour. That's how my parents debriefed at the end of the day. You know, my dad would come home from work and my mom would sit with him at the table and they'd talk about his day and about her day, and they'd have their little happy hour and their little snacks, and the kids had to disappear for a while. But that was normal to me. That was my life. I never saw falling down drunk alcoholism in my home. It was very quiet. It was very secret. And my family was the perfect, you know, June and Ward Cleaver. I had I have two brothers, an older brother and a younger brother, and my parents, and they were happily married for a really long time. So to me, I had the average all-American, you know, life. And it was good. Like I said, I was the only daughter. I was sandwiched in between two brothers, and the oldest one used to beat the crap out of me all the time for nothing. But I think that was just the life of being a little bratty sister. I do know that I was very tiny when I was growing up. I was always the tiny, quiet little girl. If I did speak, it felt like nobody heard me. I had a brother that used to beat me up all the time, and it'd be, "Mom, Dad," you know, and punishment for him was very short-lived, and it would just, you know, the insanity just went on. And what I did learn in my family was, and it was those unspoken rules in an alcoholic family, what I did learn was, as long as I was quiet, my room was clean, and I looked perfect, everything was going to be okay. I had control then. You know, the boat wasn't going to rock. The alcoholic wasn't going to go off. It's hard to describe that. I'm sure everybody here, you know, not everybody, but I can imagine that you can identify with that. The quietness and the perfection followed me through my whole life growing up. The only way I could retaliate growing up toward my brothers, really toward anybody, was sneaky. I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but I was really quiet and I was really sneaky. And, you know, I'd get in trouble anyway. In the end, I always got busted and, you know, I'd get spanked or sent to my room or soap in the mouth or whatever. But, you know, that was the only way I could cope. That was the only way I could survive, was to be sneaky and stealth and go hide in my room. I played for hours by myself in my room because it was safe. And like I said, it wasn't violent, belligerent alcoholism. It was just, you didn't, that feeling of something was going on, but it just wasn't, it was palpable in the air, that tension. And I just couldn't, I had to be by myself to get away from it. I started out, I was born in Connecticut, and when I was five, we moved down to South Florida. And, you know, for my dad, unfortunately, he had a hard time holding on to a job. And by the way, he was the alcoholic in my life. So we moved around a little bit in Florida. We ended up here in Orlando when I was in seventh grade, and I've been here ever since. I took my first drink when I was about, I think I was about 15. I remember I was a sophomore in high school. My brother was graduating. And, no, that's not true. I took my first drink. I was about 15. And I remember I was by myself in the house. My parents were out. I knew where they kept all the wine. They had a liquor cabinet over the stove. And they were gone, and I was practicing my cheerleading. I know you're shocked. I was a cheerleader, but I was practicing my cheerleading jumps in the sliding glass mirror, the sliding glass door in the dark. You know, it was dark outside. I could see myself. It was great. And I remembered, wow, that wine, all that liquor's in there. And I don't know what it was, but it was calling my name. So I went over and I had a sip of wine. And the warmth was just, it went all through my body. And I felt so good. I felt confident. And it just gave me a sense of ease and comfort, like it talks about in our literature, that ease and comfort. And I never felt that before. Never, ever felt that before. And so I went and got another little sip and another little sip because I wanted to keep that buzz going, you know. And eventually I had enough so that I couldn't practice my cheerleading jumps anymore. But so that's how it started. And it was just, to me, it was normal. It was normal that when my brother graduated, you know, the whole street, everybody had, you know, I grew up in with everybody around me. You know, we all went to school together and everybody was graduating and everybody had the parties, and they had the champagne punch. And so my best friend and I figured out which houses had the champagne punch. Ours was one of them. And we would start at my house, and then we'd wander across the street to Colette's house, and we'd have some there, and then we'd wander back. And we had it all mapped out. And, you know, by the time everything was kind of wrapping up, we had a really hard time walking through that real thick St. Augustine grass, you know, down the hill and across the street, and we were done then. But that's how my drinking was. I didn't drink a lot through the early years of high school. I'd go to a keg party with a boyfriend and take a sip of beer, and I hated beer, and you know, it didn't do anything for me yet. My senior year was a different story. I started hanging out with a guy who was a partier. And, you know, I wanted to be liked. I wanted to fit in. I was that people pleaser, you know, didn't want to speak my truth, had to be quiet and go along to get along. And that was when my drinking really, really started. When I first came in, well, no, it was when I had, it was my second sponsor, and she took me back through the steps, and she made me write a drunkalogue, and she made me write the causes and conditions and how, what my goal was when I took that drink and what the outcome was, and how in the beginning it really matched up okay, But then as I progressed through my drinking history, it was completely out of whack. You know, I drank to get that first buzz every time, you know, that initial ease and comfort. And what happened toward the end, of course, was I was blacking out. I was, you know, waking up not knowing how I got into bed. So that's when it got really bad. You know, I went off to college. I was at UCF and drank my way through my first semester and managed to get right on grade probation. And, you know, my parents were willing to pay for college, and I chose not to do college. I was present physically, but I wasn't there, you know. You know, they said, we're not paying for your college. You know, you've grade probation. You're on your own now. So I moved out. I got a full-time job, and I went to Valencia and started paying my way through night school. And, you know, it really sucked. It really sucked. I didn't like it. I thought that I felt entitled. I was pissed off that my parents weren't paying for my college anymore. But I did the best I could with what I had, and I still drank a lot. I loved to drink. I had a lot of fun drinking then. I mean, I did. I was drinking and blacking out. You know, when I drank with that first boyfriend, it was drinking and blacking out, drinking and blacking out. And you know, it felt normal to me. I didn't know anything different, and it was still fun. But I was working full time, going to night school, and you know, for me, I kept looking for that external solution. I compared my insides to your outsides. They look really good. They're so happy. They have this car, this house. She's got that boyfriend in that dress, and she's graduated college, and so that's got to be awesome. I want to do what they're doing because I want to feel that awesome. And what I came to learn is you can't have an exterior solution for an internal problem. At least I couldn't. But I didn't know that until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, fast forward, you know, I didn't want to be responsible for myself. That's why I was pissed off about college. Because I didn't want to be responsible. I didn't want to have to work and pay my way. I wanted everything just given to me. And I didn't want to work at it. I didn't want to, you know, I wanted my college degree like that. Oh, I came in, I want my degree. I don't want to have to go for 4 years and work my ass off, excuse me. So, you know, I was dating here and there, and I was working. Well, a gentleman came in, and he worked with the buyer, and I was the buyer's secretary. And lo and behold, I looked at him, and I thought, he's 10 years older than me. He's a salesman. He drives a nice car. That's what I want, because he was going to rescue me. I wouldn't have to go to school. I wouldn't have to keep working. I wouldn't have to be responsible for myself. And that was my motive. I knew that in the back of my head even then. And, of course, the drinking increased. The drinking was my solution for all those lies that I had and I kept stuffing. And, you know, for me at that time, that was the easy way out. I wanted the easy way out. I didn't want to be responsible. I was married for 20 years, and I had the house, the cars, the jewelry, the yard, the kids. Had a dog at once, too, you know, at 1.2. I had a great job. I had everything, all the trappings that this world has to offer, and I was empty. I was absolutely miserable. I had anxiety. I didn't know that's what it was, but I had anxiety, and the only thing that calmed it down was the drinking. And I remember one night, and I guess this is a moment of clarity because it still sticks with me. I don't know that I realized it then, but I remember one of the things I did to relax and feel in control was to clean and to vacuum. You know, that gave me a sense of everything's okay. And I remember one night vacuuming, and we were going through a particularly hard time financially. And I remember thinking, as long as I've got my wine, I'm going to be just fine. As long as I've got my bottle of Woodbridge Chardonnay in the outside refrigerator and one in the kitchen, I'm going to be great. And that was true. I mean, for me, that is what, that kept me going. And you know, it doesn't last forever. For me, it didn't last forever. I don't know when it turned on me. I don't know when I crossed that line, but the alcohol didn't work anymore. It just didn't. Alcohol gave me the ability to step over the line between right and wrong. It blurred it, and I had no trouble stepping over that line. And then, of course, in the morning, I'd wake up full of that remorse and that self-loathing and, oh, my God, what did I do? What did I do last night? I don't remember. How did I get in my bed? How did I get my pajamas on? How did the kids get put to bed? Oh, my God, I can't find my glasses. I was actually, this is kind of a side note, I was with somebody this morning. We were having coffee and talking program stuff, and I was struck by that memory. I talk about that a lot, you know, that incomprehensible demoralization that I would wake up every morning at 2, 3 a.m. sweaty, headache, hangover, or still drunk, and waking up and going, okay, where am I? What did I do? Where was I last night? Who did I talk to? Who did I drunk dial? Who did I drunk text? You know, and seeing the numbers in my phone and just thinking, oh my God, what did I say? And it really struck me today. I don't know what it was, but just remembering all that and feeling that fear, that fear and that hatred for myself. And it was because every single morning at 3 a.m., I would wake up and I'd say, oh my God, I'm going to stop tomorrow. I am not going to drink tomorrow. I'm not going to drink. And I'd wake up, I'd fall back asleep, I'd get up. And you know, in my mind, I wasn't an alcoholic because I could get up at 6 o'clock every morning and run 3 miles. Alcoholics can't run in the morning. But I wasn't hungover that bad. I was still drunk, but I could go run 3 miles, go play tennis with my girlfriends, even though I could hardly hit the ball. That's that rationalization that comes with this disease. You know, I could convince myself about anything as long as I could still have my drink. So I'd wake up every morning, I'm not going to drink today, I'm not going to drink today. And by noon, I'd be sitting at work and I'd be, okay, maybe I'll just have one tonight. And, you know, it's funny, I've heard this and I can identify with this because I remember feeling this. If I was out of my drink of choice and I was, you know, feeling nervous and unsettled and I, you know, of course I had to go get a couple things at the grocery for dinner. And that was just my excuse to go get another bottle of wine. But I remember feeling so anxious. And once I had the bottle in my cart in the grocery, I could take a breath, you know. And that's insane. I didn't think it was insane then. But I know today it's insanity. That's the insanity that comes with this disease. So I was powerless. I knew before I came into AA that I was an alcoholic. I knew that. My cousins, the alcoholism runs back through my family as long as you can go back. Nobody's ever come into recovery. We'd vacation with my cousins up in Massachusetts, and it was always just this huge drunk fest. You know, I got such a kick out of watching my older guy cousins just get slammed, you know, just hammered and couldn't walk across the room, and it was just a laugh riot, you know. But because I wasn't like them, I wasn't an alcoholic. And what I came to learn, as the drinking didn't work anymore and I had lost all control, I couldn't stop drinking. You read more about alcoholism and that's me. I did everything it says in that book. I did everything. I drank different brands. I drank natural wine, switched to beer, you know. Ugh. I did all that. I couldn't stop. I could not stop. This is actually kind of funny. For Lent one year, I swore, you know, forget about the New Year's resolution. New Year's had come and gone, and I failed that one miserably. And so I thought, okay, well, Lent is coming. So here's my next chance. And you know, I'm gonna quit drinking for Lent. 40 days. I can do it. I know I can do it. And, damn, You know, I rationalized. Now, this is a friend at my church helped me get to this rationalization. He said, it was actually a priest. And he said to me, you know, at sundown on Saturday nights, you know, Sundays are feast days during Lent. That means you can have whatever you want. So whatever you gave up for Lent, you can eat it on Sunday, and Sunday starts at sundown on Saturday. And I'm like, yes! So, there's that rationalization. We can always find a loophole. So that was Lent. Lent was staying dry for, you know, 5 days. And drinking on Saturday night and getting absolutely smashed, going to church on that Sunday, still drunk or hungover, you know, and then I drank all day Sunday, and then Monday would come and I was a good girl, you know. So that was my Lent. But see, it still didn't work. I still couldn't stop drinking, and it talks about making promises and, you know, swearing off the drink, and I couldn't do it. So I finally come to the end of my rope. I didn't lose anything. I didn't lose the material stuff. I didn't lose a marriage. I didn't lose a car. I didn't have a DUI. I didn't have a lot of those yet. And, you know, for a while that kept me out of AA, that rationalization. I'm not an alcoholic. I haven't lost anything. I haven't gotten busted, you know. But I finally knew. And I admitted to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. I'd asked my husband at the time, "You think I'm an alcoholic?" No, you just drink a little too much. You're not an alcoholic. No, you're fine. Just have two when you go out. Oh, you know, I couldn't do that. You know, I'd prep myself. I'd have a couple before I went, and then we'd go. We'd come home early, and then I'd stay up drinking all night and pass out on the sofa. And, you know, it's just over and over and over again. But when I did finally know I had a problem, I realized that I had to be truthful with myself. And once I accepted that, you know, Katie barred the door, because I was ready. I was ready. I had the gift of desperation. I woke up the night of my last drunk. It was 2 a.m. and it was that whole insanity, sweating, scared to death. What did I do? Did I, you know, the same crap. And I was done. I knew when I went back to sleep, I was done. And that was early on a Sunday morning, and that Tuesday I went to my first AA meeting. And I remember calling my mom. My husband at the time was out of the country traveling. And I didn't want to go. I didn't want to admit all this to him. I wanted it to be just my thing first. I wanted to keep it just to myself. And so I called my mom. And I said, "I need you to, I'm nervous, I'm scared, I need you to take me to an AA meeting." She goes, "What?" And I said, "I'm an alcoholic, Mom." "No, you're not." But I got to tell you this, I got to back up just a minute, because when I made the decision to go, you know, I took the little test online and I answered all the questions. There were a couple I couldn't answer, but, you know, it says if you've answered 3 or 4, you might have a problem. If you've answered more than that, well, then you really, you need to get help. So I had a problem. But this is how, what a control freak I am, or what I was. You know, it's progress, not perfection. I look online, I got to the intergroup page for Orlando, and I called the hotline, and I was looking through the meeting guide, and I'm like, "Well, I can't go there because that's near my house, and I can't go to that meeting because it's where I work. It's near where I work." And, you know, it's that whole, the hamster is going, "Aah!" And so I called the hotline, and I said, "You know, I think I'm an alcoholic. What would be the best meeting for me to go to?" "Well, you need to go to a beginner's meeting." "Well, what's that like? Is there an agenda? Can I find the plan for the meeting? You know, what's it like?" I was trying to figure all that out before I even got to the door. And but that's how I roll, you know. That's how I roll. And he was so patient with me. And he directed me to a beginner's meeting, and it was in Castleberry, which was kind of out of the way, you know. And he said, here's the beginner's meeting. It was a Tuesday night meeting at Rebo's. And my mom's driving me, and she's, you know, out of her mind. "I can't believe you're an alcoholic." And And she said, I know you're going to do this, Nancy, because you've got such strong will. And I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, if you only knew. And so I got there. I get out of the car. My mom said, well, I'll be back. I'll be back in an hour. And I'm like, oh, you know, I got to go. So she pulls out. And there's women out in the parking lot. And I'm like, oh, great, there's women here. I'm going to be okay. Where's the AA meeting? Oh, you go in, take a left down the hall, and it's down the hall on the left. And I said, well, aren't you coming? Well, no, we were at Al-Anon. I'm like, oh. So I walk down the hall. And I'm late because that's what I do. I'm late. I'm about 5 minutes late. You know, not realizing that when it is straight up, man, that meeting starts and nothing waits, you know. Nobody, it, you know, not that glamorous, I'll be, you know, what is it, the movie star entrance? Yeah, fashionably late. So I walk in the door thinking, I'll just sneak in the back and sit down and nobody will know I'm here. And I walk in that room, it's about this big. There's 8 people there. And I'm the only woman. And I walk in that door and I'm like, I can't walk out now. So I just went in and I sat down right in the chair right next to the door and I just sat and I listened and looked at the steps and I thought, there's no way. I was so full of shame, in all seriousness. I was so full of shame that when I saw the word God and step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory, it scared me to death. But I also knew in my heart that there was no other way. I had no other option. Because I was so sick of doing what I was doing. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, the other thing about the alcohol, when I finally got to the jumping off point, is it didn't work for me in that it didn't block out the lies anymore. All those uncomfortable feelings and all the lies that I kept telling myself of, you know, if we get the new house, my marriage is going to be okay. If I get this, my job's going to be okay. If I only do this, if I only do that. And the alcohol didn't block out those thoughts anymore. The lies were real. They were just coming up. And that's what I mean when I say the alcohol didn't work anymore. It was killing me physically. And if I drank any longer, I know I would have had serious physical ramifications. So I had my first meeting, and you know the guys that were at the meeting, the chairs, they were so sweet. They pulled me aside at the end of the meeting. They gave me my big book in 12 and 12, and they gave me a meeting list, and they checked off some meetings for me. You'd probably really do well at this meeting. There are a lot of young women there, you know. And they directed me, and I remember seeing them at a meeting, you know, 6 months later, and I thanked them, you know, because I found a group and I was on the path. So that's how I got into AA. I was really grateful for that gift of desperation. And I don't remember when. I do remember that when I came in, I was willing to do anything that anybody told me. You know, all the suggestions that I heard, you know, read this, get the daily reflections, listen to speaker tapes, you got to change everything. The same man's going to drink again. If you change people, places, things. I listened to it all and I soak it up like a sponge. And thank God I had that willingness. You know, for me at night, my drinking started at 5 o'clock straight up, and I wasn't an alcoholic, of course, because I didn't start drinking before 5 p.m., but I would cook. I loved to cook, and that's when I did my drinking. I'd cook dinner, and I'd drink and drink and drink, and I'd have a bottle of Woodbridge in the refrigerator and a bottle of Woodbridge in the fridge out in the garage, so nobody knew how much I was drinking. I was wheeling and dealing and manipulating. But what I had to change was I would listen to the... I'd have the CBS Evening News going while I was cooking. And I swear to you, it was like Pavlov's dog. I'd hear, bum, 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 bum. And I'd have to go and get a drink. It was like, oh my God, I'm a drink, you know? And that really was what it was like. And so I had to change that. Changing just that was huge for me. And I started listening to speaker tapes. and the news never came on again. And you know what else? I stopped cooking. I didn't feel like I had to cook every night anymore because I didn't want to drink anymore. You know, I don't know when that flipped for me. I just know that the obsession was lifted, and I'm so grateful today that it was, and it was quick. I went to a lot of meetings. I was blessed with unemployment at that time in my life, which meant that, and I really do mean that seriously, because I was able to go to as many meetings as I needed to, as I wanted to. I met a lot of great people. It was a great experience. I got a sponsor probably 3 months in. I was afraid. I was very timid, didn't trust anybody, most especially men. But I also didn't trust women, because I'm a woman and I knew what you were thinking. And so it was hard, but I just kept going. I just kept coming back. And, you know, honestly, they, you know, I said, how do I find a sponsor? And they said, you just got to listen, keep going to meetings and identify and see who, you know, see who's the winner at every meeting, reads the book, talks the book, walks the walk. You're going to know. And, you know, it wasn't working for me like that. And I remember one day I was at a 12 and 12 meeting, and it was the fourth step. And honestly, you know, for me, when I came in, I was already at three. I knew God. I knew He was there. I trusted God. But I had it here, but I didn't have it here. I knew I was powerless over alcohol. My life was hell. I knew there was a power greater than myself. And I was ready. I was ready to turn my life over. But I had to keep coming so that I knew how to do that. So I could not drink so that I could do the rest of the deal. So I was at a 12 and 12 meeting. And it was a four-step. And, of course, I'm not going to do a four-step. I'm not. And because I was so ashamed. That shame was with me. And it's like a 1,000-pound weight on my shoulders. And I sat at a four-step meeting. And I remember I couldn't hold it together anymore. I just lost it. And this woman, who I was terrified of, because she was from Boston, and she you know, she's a little rough around the edges. She had a great sense of humor. She's a little off color sometimes, and you know, and so I was a little afraid of her. But she came up to me at the end of that meeting, and she sat me down in the corner, and she said, "Talk to me," and it all came out, and she just listened. And she validated, and she listened, and that's what it took. My sponsor found me, and it was downhill from there. It was easy. I mean, it wasn't easy, but you know what I mean. Once I resigned myself to this is what I got to do, and I was willing, it was awesome. Now, I was 6 months sober. And this is just for me, and this is just my story. And this worked for me. I was in a position where I did have to leave my husband. I did. And that's my story. And my sponsor, you know, I talked at length with her, and she knew if I had not changed my situation at that point, I would have drank. And I, above all, I didn't want to drink. And so I left. That was really hard. It was very painful. Because I hadn't. My family was alcoholic, so I was getting the shun. And what are you doing? And why are you not drinking? And so I had very little support. My support was in the rooms. You guys were my family. You still are my family. I come to you guys when I have a problem, because the alcoholism that the disease of alcoholism, as I've learned it through Alcoholics Anonymous, is it affects the entire family. It's not just me. And it's not just about putting down the alcohol. The behaviors that go with it talks about it in the doctor's opinion. You know, this is a disease. This is not just me being a bad girl drinking too much. This is a disease. And it wants me dead. And so when I left, it was for self-preservation. And my sponsor was awesome. you know, it just worked out the way it was supposed to work out. You know, I'm going to go ahead and jump into the gifts that I've received from this program. You know, it talks about the promises, and the promises, I could see the promises in my life so quickly, just by not picking up a drink. My heart turned. You know, I had that psychic change after I worked the steps. The fourth step was just throwing the monkey off my back, writing out my resentments, and I had a long list of resentments. The minute that got on paper, guys, I remember walking away and coming back to my paper and looking at the people on my list, and you know, I didn't have that resentment anymore. It was gone. Just by writing it down, I could see my part. And it was very humbling. It was so humbling. And then, you know, 5 and 6 and 7 and the rest of it. You know, I did the steps in order with a sponsor, and it works. It really, really works. I just had 5 years of sobriety, my anniversary on the 11th of June. And I can't believe it's been 5 years. It's been a lot of hard work, but the rewards are so incredible for being sober. The thing I've learned, and I continue to learn, and I continue to see, is, you know, God gave me the gift of sobriety, and what I give back to Him is what I do with it. That's my gift back to God, is what do I do with my sobriety. And you know, I made my amends, my official amends, but what I've learned today is my amends are daily. I get a mulligan, I get a do-over for every single thing that I lived through drunk. My experience is that I'm getting to live it again in sobriety. And I get to do it sober. You know, when I was going through hell, when I was during my first year and the chaos with the marital stuff and the kids, and you know, I would get so upset, and my sponsor would say, "Nancy, you are a mother who is present and accounted for in your children's lives today. And that's the greatest gift you can give them." And it's just amazing how God has worked. You know, I know today that everything that has happened to me was exactly how God wanted it to be. Exactly. I had a son who did not want to speak to me ever again when I got sober. He was 17, and he hated me. He was so angry that I left his father. And that I ruined his life, you know. Oh, yeah. I wanted to grow up in this home. Anyway, he didn't want to talk to me ever again. He sent me a scathing email, and I thought I'd lost my son. And I thought I'd lost my biological family, because they didn't understand how I could go to a group of strangers to get help and not come to them. But what I've learned today in my experience is time does take time. And I heard that when I first came in. I'm like, you don't get it. You don't get it. This is killing me. And but I'm here to tell you today, I haven't had to pick up a drink. I haven't had to commit murder. I haven't had to do any of that horrible stuff. And the gifts are, my son and I are closer today than I have ever been with him in his whole life. Because I stayed in sobriety and worked, and I worked this program as it's outlined in the big book. And I continued to take the suggestions and be willing and to be of service and to just do the deal. You know, that sick alcoholic family that I had with my kids and even my ex-husband, their father, my kids are healing. My son sought outside help that he needed. He never would have done that had I not gotten sober. Never. My daughters, you know, we've had a pretty rocky road, but I attribute a lot of it. It's taken time to accept this. I've attributed a lot of it to the fact that she's a teenager and she's doing her job. My sponsor has told me that a million times. She's just doing her job. She's a teenage girl. She's just doing her job. And, but The other thing I've gotten to do over, I've gotten to be a mom again. I've gotten to do it the right way, the sober way. I've gotten to be a worker among workers. I have the same type of job that I had when I was drinking. And I walked away from that job, you know, in the alcoholic paranoia and the ego and the, I don't need this job. And really what I was running away from was, oh my God, they're going to find out all the bad stuff I've done. And so I had to quit. You know, I just had to quit. But today, I get to do it again. And today I'm blessed with this awesome job and awesome people that I work with. And it's amazing to me that I have this gift today. I also, and I know this is a God thing, I get a mulligan on a marriage. And when I first got sober and I left my marriage, I thought, I'm never going to get married again. I'm not. It's too painful. I don't want that ever again. And time takes time. And God connected me, and this was through no effort of my own, I'll have you know, and a lot of women know my story with my husband. He put us together, and my husband was working in Iraq as a contractor, and I was here in Altamont, and our paths crossed. And I get to do marriage the right way this time. I get to have a real relationship with a partner by working the principles of this program. If I work this program and I work the traditions in my marriage, it all works out. I get to stay right-sized in my marriage. I never did that before. And I get to love another human being the way you're supposed to love a human being. It's not about what I can get. It's about what I can give today. And I'm so blessed. I'm so blessed to have my husband. I've also, I have two of my own kids. My son now is 23, and my daughter is 18. And, they're doing okay, but I also have the blessing of taking on three stepsons. And, boys are really easy when it's just one of them. But when boys get together, they get that pack mentality going. And they're like little bear cubs, you know. When I married Marcus, Adam was 16?
Yeah.
16.
Yeah.
16, 12?
16, 13, and 11.
Okay. 16, 13, and 11. And, they came over for a month during our first summer together married. They stayed with us for a month, and it was a challenge. But it's a gift, too. I get to do that again. I get to do that mother thing over again, and I get to do it right. I've learned a lot about myself, being a stepmom. And I'm proud. I'm proud of those boys. I'm proud that I have the opportunity to be in their life today. That's it for me. I am such a blessed woman today, and it is only through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not an easy journey. It's a very simple program for complicated people. And, for me, I can complicate a free lunch. And that's just the way I am. There's so much stuff. I was thinking all about this today. What am I going to say? And my first sponsor, Gail from Boston, I talked to her, and she said, don't plan it. And I've talked before, and I've never planned it. And, I thought, well, I'm going to speak at Central, so I probably have to have an outline. But I talked to Robin, too, and Robin said, don't plan it. And so I just did what has worked for all of you and what has worked for me in the past. And, today I get to be God's vessel. And that's such a gift. It is such a gift. So if you're new, keep coming back. Don't pick up a drink. Don't pick up a drink and just keep coming back. And take the suggestions that are given to you, because this is a life that I could never have imagined for myself, never in a million years. I like who I am today, and I'm so blessed. So thank you for having me. It's been an honor and a privilege, and that's all I got. Thanks.